Hi, everyone. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. For most of the past decade, homelessness across the United States has been on the decline, falling 15% since 2007. But from 2017 to 2018, data from the Department of Housing and Urban Development show that homelessness across the country rose slightly by less than 1%. Now, that might not seem like much, but the national numbers don't always reveal the full extent of homelessness in certain populations or places hit the hardest. For instance, while California saw the biggest drop in homelessness in 2017, LA County's homeless population increased by nearly 60,000 people over the past year. And a lot of you have been homeless yourselves. You told us how it affected you.
This is Chris from Hartsville, South Carolina. When I was 15, I was homeless, but still managed to graduate and go on to be in the Marine Corps. I remember the kindness of one McDonald's worker who would always leave food out by the dumpster when I came by for after-school food. To this day, I will help anyone who claims to be hungry. Whether they are or not is irrelevant to me. I wish that on no man, woman, or child, because hunger is a great equalizer.
My name is Jasmine, and I'm calling from Mountain View, California. I just want to say it's very dangerous and scary and can be very humiliating being homeless. And there are a lot of people out here that are homeless that don't look homeless. You could be Ubering during the day and sleeping in your car, or couch surfing, and vulnerable to sexual exploitation.
Hi, this is Joe Martin in Fort Collins, Colorado. I've never actually owned a home. I've always rented an apartment or a room or whatever. And I've ended up homeless 3 times for various reasons, and all for less than 2 months each. Simply finding a place to park your car so you can sleep in it is a soul-crushing experience.
Thanks to you all for sharing your experiences. And as we heard from your calls, homelessness can take many forms, and it can often be invisible to the general public. Joining me now is Sarah Rankin, the founder and director of the Homeless Rights Advocacy Project at the Seattle University School of Law. Welcome to The Takeaway, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
So when we look at these national numbers, how much are they telling us about the true scope of homelessness in this country, particularly this less than 1% uptick?
Well, what we know is that a lot of the drivers for the 1% uptick are along coastal cities, especially along the West Coast. And we also know that those numbers are pretty stark underestimations of the overall problem. The method by which they determine the number of homeless people in the country is a volunteer effort based on a one-night count. And so these estimations are the proverbial tip of the iceberg.
Well, first of all, let's go back. There was a drop in homelessness, about 15% for over a decade. Why are we starting to see this slight increase now?
So what has become a particular issue over the last few years is really that our country is crippled by an affordable housing crisis. We know that this disproportionately punishes lower-income households and increasingly impacts middle-income Americans. There have been a number of studies that have established that a $100 increase in rent can result in a 6 to 32% increase in homelessness in a particular area. And it's also happening at the same time that we're seeing spiking income inequality, again, especially along coastal cities. We have eviction epidemics. All of these things have been relatively recent in the last few years, but it's been building over time, starting in the 1980s when we started to divest from investments in affordable housing. HUD's budget was slashed, and as a result, we've really overstressed and underfunded social service providers. So there's a lot of tangled threads that come together into this web.
Sarah, I want to talk a little bit about what prompted this conversation. I live in New York City. I've noticed that in my just anecdotal experience, I grew up in the city in the 80s. As you mentioned, there were lots of changes that happened in the 80s, and it seemed like homelessness was pervasive then. It feels like it's more visible now in New York City, and some of our listeners on Twitter shared their experiences as well, saying they felt like it was also more visible. Is it more visible, or is it more pervasive, or both?
So it's really important to distinguish between homelessness generally and unsheltered homelessness in particular. I know that seems counterintuitive that there would be people who are sheltered who are homeless, but there are folks who are either availing themselves of emergency shelter or are couch surfing or are living doubled or even tripled or quadrupled up with others. So folks who are unsheltered The majority of people who you see on the street are actually just, they're a very small portion of an overall homeless population. Here in the Seattle area, our unsheltered chronic homeless population is about 29% of our overall homeless population. And it's important to understand that people who are chronically homeless really are a specific subset of people. There's actually a technical definition for chronic homelessness, and it means that they have to have two hallmarks. The first is that they are homeless for more frequently and for longer periods of time, and they're suffering from a disabling condition that prevents them from working. So something like a chronic health problem, a psychiatric or emotional condition, or physical disability. So when the typical person is responding to the visibility of homelessness, you're really responding to your perception that there's been an increase in the number of people who are unsheltered and chronically homeless.
What's holding up? We talk a lot about affordable housing, and I'm going to extend that to, you mentioned a little bit about how HUD's budget has been slashed, so I'm going to assume there isn't much funding there for public housing. But even when we look at what's called affordable housing, and I'm using air quotes around affordable here in New York City, it feels like it's not really that affordable. I mean, what's holding up more housing to house folks that are in this position?
So, yeah, and there's a distinction again between affordable housing, which really creates the pipeline into homelessness, and sort of unsheltered people who need, in particular, something called supportive housing, which is a type of affordable housing that has wraparound services available. And so for affordable housing, we know that a lot of cities have extreme affordable housing crises and are not building sufficient low-income housing in order to stop the pipeline. They're also not building and siting a sufficient number of supportive housing units, which would really be what is needed to address chronic homelessness. The vast majority of cities have these complex laws that virtually guarantee that somebody who has no reasonable alternative but to live in public space will be caught up in the criminal justice system. We can show statistically that they're more likely to become sick, even more likely to die.
Sarah Rankin is the director of the Homeless Rights Advocacy Project at the Seattle University School of Law. Sarah, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Massachusetts is the only state with a right to shelter law, which means that anyone who does not have a place to sleep at night must be provided with some kind of shelter. According to the federal government, it has one of the lowest rates of homelessness in the country. But from 2017 to 2018, homelessness in Massachusetts spiked 14%, the highest percent increase in the country that year. So what happened? Joining me now is Anissa Asaibi-George. She's a Boston City Councilor at Large, and she chairs the Council's Committee on Homelessness, Mental Health, and Recovery. Welcome to The Takeaway, Anissa.
Thank you.
So this 14% spike from 2017 to 2018, what are some of the main reasons for homelessness in the area, and who's most affected by homelessness?
Well, I'll start first with who's most affected. I think, unfortunately, our children in those families are most affected, and we see that very directly here in the city of Boston, where in our Boston public schools, about 10% or 5,000 of our students are experiencing homelessness. We think there's another 1,000 students or young people, kids that are not yet in school, also experiencing homelessness. And it's a huge impact on their ability to achieve academically. It obviously brings a lot of chaos and instability to their experience as children. And we want our children to have positive, joyful experiences growing up. And for me, it's a combination of the cost of housing here in the city of Boston and in the New England and the greater Boston region. But it's also the instability that families experience through trauma, through other vulnerabilities that have really created this unstable living situation.
Given that Massachusetts has a right to shelter law, how do you explain the 14% increase just in one year?
Well, we think it's a combination of lots of different things. But I think first and foremost, the cost of housing and the ability and availability of affordable housing that can fit families. We also know some of our lowest income families who should qualify and do qualify for public housing don't have access. And the family size has grown. We're not building in this region enough family housing, family-sized housing. For me here in Boston, we've talked and spent a lot of time talking about individuals experiencing homelessness and responding to that crisis with some specific steps. We need to replicate that when it comes to families.
Anissa, one of the things that prompted this conversation that we're having today on The Takeaway was just seeing homelessness seems much more visible than it has been, at least in New York and from some of our listeners in a lot of the cities that they live in, than it has been in quite some time. Part of that visibility are things like encampments. And we know that Boston police recently destroyed and cleared out homeless encampments this month. In your role on the city council, how do you respond to that?
One of my greatest concerns about Operation Clean Sweep that happened a few weeks here in Boston is that we've disrupted the continuum of care and the ecosystem that many of these individuals in that case have created for themselves. Their internal support systems, their relationships with street workers that they were able to create. And for me, making sure and Boston's response going forward needs to make sure any individual that's been impacted by this move by the Boston police in the last couple of weeks, that we've found ways to reconnect with them with service workers. But Tanzina, one of the things that you are falling into here is we're getting away from the conversation of families, because the topic of individuals experiencing homelessness and families experiencing homelessness is a very different conversation. And it has to be a conversation that is happening side by side at the same time.
Correct. I mean, so, to your point, I think that's how we started the conversation now, was talking about families. But at the end of the day, we're also talking about human beings who have a place to live. And so I think both of those conversations are worth having. Let me ask you at the end of the day, because we're running out of time here, is there a timeline for building more affordable housing or public housing in the Boston area?
There is not a timeline with public housing. The feds a number of years ago stepped out of that business, and the city has stepped into that business. We as a city have become much more aggressive in building affordable housing. We have to make sure that affordable housing becomes more deeply affordable, and that, again, we're creating more opportunities for families in that affordable housing pool, because the stock that we're building is often one and two bedroom apartments and housing units. And we need to be looking towards three and four bedroom units for the growing size, family size of many of our families experiencing homelessness.
Anissa Asaibi George is Boston City Councilor at Large, who chairs the Council's Committee on Homelessness, Mental Health, and Recovery. Anissa, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.